Okay, verse 104. Listen, all of this is but dependent origination. What is perceived as dependent is void of independence. Like false illusions, they change from one form into another. Like a fire ring seen in a rotating torch, they are mere affectations or images. Okay, so they're saying, listen, hey, wake up, everybody. Okay, all of this is but dependent origination. Okay, so that means that everything that exists arises dependently. Nothing arises independently. What does it mean to arise dependently? What does that mean? Okay, there's three different levels of dependence. One level is dependence in terms of cause and effect. Things arise depending, functioning things, impermanent things, arise depending on their causes. Without the causes, the effects aren't there. So anything that functions in our world, it didn't come about causelessly. It didn't just appear. Okay? Anything that's happening, anything that's functioning in our world, does not exist due to its own power. It arose due to the power of its causes. There's all those different attributes. We say there's soup there. Is this body experience? Only exists because the causes for us exist. Think about that. This person that feels so solid and really existent, it only exists because the causes of us exist. Yeah? The causes of us are pretty unstable, aren't they? Yeah, they're changing all the time. They're not fixed. So, you know, the result, us, is likewise unstable, impermanent. Yeah? So, all the things that we're aiming to get, all the things we're craving, they only exist in dependence upon the causes. They don't exist from their own side, under their own power. So they only exist because the causes of them exist. And the causes, you know, are unstable, aren't they? Yeah. Causes have to be unstable because to get the result, the cause has to cease. Okay? So all these impermanent things that we're craving, that we want, by their very nature, you know, they're terribly unstable. They exist only because the causes exist, and in the perceiving, you know, definition of mind is what's clarity and awareness. It's mind that cognizes. So if there's cognition and perception and experience, that's what's, you know, because everything is, you know, on this incredibly shaky foundation of impermanence. Yeah, changing, changing, changing. So nothing exists under its own power, independent of other things. It all exists, you know, dependent on its causes. Okay, the impermanent things. Okay, permanent things don't have causes. But whether something's permanent or impermanent, it depends on its parts. Okay, so looking at the microphone has parts. Looking at the body has parts. Okay, looking at the car has parts. Looking at what we call I, the I has parts. It has different subdivisions. You know, there's the part that's, you know, whatever race you are, whatever gender you are, whatever nationality you are, there's the part, you know, from 5 years old, from 10 years old, from 15 years old. There's a lot of different eyes in there. Okay? Not one solid, concrete person. And at mind, because mind does all these things. Okay? But we only say, you know, I perceive this independence upon the mind, don't we? So the I and the mind, and you start dissecting it into its parts, do you still have that thing? You know, we look out there and we say, there's a tree. If you start dissecting the tree and you put a branch here and a branch here and you stack up the leaves everywhere, do you still have a tree? No, there's no tree there. Okay. The tree depends on the parts. Yeah. What's the relationship between the tree and the parts? Are the parts the tree? Is the tree the part? Is there a tree that possesses the parts? Yeah. Is there first a tree and then you fill in the parts? Or are there first parts and then you get a tree out of that? Okay. Does the tree possess the parts? Is the tree the shape of the parts? Is the tree the collection of the parts? What's the relationship between the tree and its parts? Yeah, okay. So we have these parts. Yeah. Our mind looks at them, joins them together by the force of conception, gives it a term. Okay. That's how the conventional object exists. And then we forget that we're the one that gave it the label, and we think that that basis is the labeled object. We think that there's a tree out there on the basis. We call it cake existing? Put it that way. No. Okay. Can you eat chocolate cake without the taste as part of it? Parts? And they depend on the mind that conceives and labels them. Okay. Now, you look at when we say I, okay, there feels like there's a real me here, doesn't there? There's a real me. I want happiness. Yeah. I don't want to have to sit here and have my knees hurt. You know, there seems to be this real me here. Okay. Well, what are the parts of I? Okay, what's the basis upon which we label I? You know, it has to do with the body and mind, doesn't it? Yeah? I mean, without a body and a mind, do we see a person? No. Okay, there's no body and mind here. Do we see a person there? Soup. We know we're eating soup because there's taste. Okay, there's mass. There's the touch feeling, separate from our body and mind, don't we? You know? Okay, I die, but I still exist. Don't we? You know? I'm impervious to the other. But if they were inherently existent, that wouldn't be the case at all. They could be established totally separately. Yeah? So in the same way, if the body is this quite independent I that's just, you know, okay, body falls apart, so what? I still exist. Or we have this very strong feeling of, you know, our mind, you know. It's very, you know, I am my mind. I mean, Descartes, I think, therefore I am. Yeah, my thoughts are me. Just keep thinking. I won't stop existing as long as I think. Hold your questions, please. You know, I won't stop existing as long as I think. Yeah, we feel like there's this real me. I am my thoughts. Yeah. But when we examine, you know, exactly those attributes, no. Okay. So what exactly are you eating? Are you eating taste? Liver goes here, the spleen goes here, the pancreas goes here, your brain goes over there, the eyeballs are over here, your intestines. Is there you somewhere? Okay. We take apart our mind. You know, our anger goes over here, our attachment goes over there, our jealousy's over here, our Buddha nature's back there, our love is here, and our compassion is there. Is some part of it me? Okay. Who exactly is this person who's afraid? Okay. This person that gets afraid, who is it? You know, is it the body that's afraid? Is it the mind that's afraid? Who is it? You know, we already realized that the I exists somewhere related to the body and mind. It's not separate from the body and mind. So if it's there, if it has its own nature, if it's findable when it's examined for, we should be able to find that person who's terrified somewhere in the body and mind. Is the soup that I'm eating? Can you find the soup without any of the attributes of the soup? How do I know I'm eating soup? Because of the attributes. Are the attributes the soup? If the person were the fear, then when you say, I'm walking, is fear walking? Or if you say the person is the fear and you say, I'm thinking, is the fear thinking? Or do you have many eyes, one eye that's the fear and one eye that's thinking and a third eye that's walking? Do you have many different eyes? Who are you? You know, when you write your name, you only write in one name. You know, Joe Blow. You know, who are you? We say Joe Blow walks and he's afraid and, you know, he's walking. So who's this Joe Blow that's doing all these different things? You know, if there's one findable person there that you can draw a circle around that exists independently, then how could he both walk and be afraid? Because to change from walking to being afraid, I mean, he would have to change, wouldn't he? If Joe Blow's walking and then Joe Blow's afraid, there's a change that happened in Joe Blow. Yeah. If Joe Blow has a fixed permanent essence, can he change? Okay. So things exist from their own side if they exist independently of other things. There's self-confidence. No, they're the attributes of self-confidence. Okay, the attributes, the parts, and the whole are different things. Independently, that means they can't have causes. They can't, because if they have causes, they exist dependent on their causes. If they exist independently, they also can't have parts, because things depend on their parts. So then you have a bunch of things, but no parts. You have a car, but no car parts. Right? What are you going to drive? Yeah? You have a car, but you don't have any car parts? Or you say, I want to eat chocolate cake, but the chocolate cake doesn't have any attributes. There's no taste, there's no color, there's no shape, there's no smell. There's no texture. What are you eating? Okay? If chocolate cake existed independently with its own inherent essence, it would be totally eat soup, and we do all sorts of things with soup. But when we analyze and try and find the soup, we can't find something separate, chocolate cake over here, and they'd be totally unrelated things, because chocolate cake had its own essence independent of all of its qualities. So if you crave a chocolate cake that had its own essence, it wouldn't have any qualities. What in the world are you craving? Okay? Or are you going to crave the qualities of chocolate cake without there being any chocolate cake? Can you crave the taste of chocolate cake without chocolate cake existing? Yeah? I mean, can you taste some chocolate cake without chocolate cake existing? Put it that way. No. Okay. Can you eat chocolate cake without the taste as part of it? No, they're intimately related. Is the chocolate cake the same thing as its taste? No. Okay. You can't separate them. Okay, the cake and all of its qualities, we can't separate them out as totally unrelated things that are independent. Pretty difficult for my mind to hold a spoon, because my mind doesn't have form. So it must be my body that's eating the soup. isn't my feeling totally separate from its qualities because it has its own essence? Or it would have to be exactly the same as its qualities because it had its own essence. But what we find is that chocolate cake and its qualities are there depending upon each other, and we can't establish one except by establishing the other. But if they were inherently existent, that wouldn't be the case at all. They could be established totally separately. Yeah. So in the same way, if the body and mind were, you know, had its own essence, if the I, the person, had its own essence, you could establish the person without establishing the body and mind. I could exist without a body and mind. What is this I going to do if without a body and mind? Can the I think without having a body and mind? No, the I can't think because it's the mind that thinks. Can the I walk without its aggregates? No, because it's the body that walks. Can the I be afraid without the aggregates? No, because it's the mental factor of fear that's afraid. Okay? So the I can't exist as something totally separate from the aggregates, having its own nature. It's completely dependent on the aggregates. But are the aggregates, the body and mind, the same thing as the I? No. Okay? So this is what it means when it says things exist dependently on each other, but they don't have their own essence. They're empty of inherent existence. So very helpful. You know, it sounds like a bunch of theory, but very helpful when you're afraid. Sit there and ask yourself, who is afraid? Yeah. Or when you're sitting there going, I want this. Ask yourself, exactly who is this I that's wanting exactly what? You know, what exactly is this thing that I'm wanting? And who exactly is what is it that's wanting it? You know, and investigate and see if you can find either the I, the person that's craving this thing, or the exact thing that you're craving. Yeah, very interesting. So this can be extremely practical. Yeah, the agent, the I, the action, eating, and the object, the soup, and we try and find any of them, can't find any of us. To meet you. I mean, that's how we introduce ourselves. I'm the one with no self-confidence. Either that or I'm the one who knows everything. Okay. But let's do the one of I have no self-confidence. Who exactly is this person who has no self-confidence? Find him or her. And what exactly is this self-confidence? What exactly is self-confidence? How do you know when there's self-confidence? And list out to yourself the attributes of self-confidence. Then are the attributes of self-confidence the same thing as self-confidence? No. They're the attributes of self-confidence. Okay, the attributes, the parts, and the whole are different things. Exist dependent upon each other, but they're different. Can you have self-confidence without the attributes of self-confidence? No. Can you have the attributes of self-confidence without self-confidence? No. What exactly is this self-confidence? Is it the collection of all those attributes? No, because the collection is just a collection. And there's nothing there. Yeah. Does that mean that nothing exists? No, things exist, because I'm eating soup and everybody agrees. And you know, the parts of the car is not a car. So exactly, you know, what is this self-confidence that I lack? And who exactly is it that's lacking it? Yeah. And see what that does to your negative self-image. Okay? Yeah. See what that does to your image of yourself. Okay. So listen, all of this is but dependent origination. You know, it all is existing dependently. What is perceived as dependent is devoid of independence. Makes sense, doesn't it? If it's dependent, it can't be independent. These two are totally mutually exclusive and contradictory. If it's independent, it can't be dependent. Okay. It's like there can't be part of you that's permanent and another part that changes. You know? If it changes, the whole thing changes. Yeah? Okay, so it's not like one part of you is independent, but the rest of you is independent. Or one part of you is independent, but the rest is dependent. You know, we get that idea. Yeah, there's one independent soul. It's not like the mind is here and the eye is totally separate. But are the mind and the eye exactly the same thing? No. Because the mind can't... Well, try and find it. What is this soul that is independent of the body and mind? If it's independent of body and mind, you can take away the body, you can take away the mind, you have the soul right there. You can draw a line on it. What in the world are you going to draw a line around that's you if there's no body and mind there? Some kind of ethereal gas? You know? Some kind of white, shapeless, ethereal form? Is that you? What exactly is this soul that we feel is the essence of me-ness? What is it? What are you going to point to? You know, person's dead, body's there, mind's gone. What is left? Okay, what is this soul that we think is there? Who are you going to point to? What are you going to point to? What? Dependence upon all those different qualities, we say soup. So because there's all those different attributes, we say there's soup there. Is this body experience? Is the mind having the out-of-body experience? Is it the mind that's out of the body? If it's the mind out of the body, and the mind is separate from the person, you know? When we say, I was looking at it, isn't that mostly a function of mind? Isn't mind doing the looking and the perceiving? You know, definition of mind is what's clarity and awareness. It's mind that cognizes. So if there's cognition and perception and experience, that's the job of the mind. Okay, so the mind is perceiving and doing all these things. Well, if the mind is perceiving and doing that, who needs an I? What purpose does I, you know, if there's an independent I, what do you need an I for if there's an independent mind? Because mind does all these things. Okay? But we only say, you know, I perceive this independence upon the mind, don't we? So the I and the mind are related. It's not like the mind is here and the I is totally separate. But are the mind and the I exactly the same thing? No. Because the mind can't do everything that the eye can. Okay, mind and eye are different. They're different conventionally, but they exist with independence upon each other. Okay, so it's very interesting to start, you know, to be aware of your experience. I mean, we do all sorts of things with soup, but when we analyze and try and find the soup, we can't find something separate that we're eating. Yeah? How do you know you're eating soup? We know we're eating soup because there's taste. Okay? There's mass. There's the touch feeling. There's smell. There's sight. You know, color and shape of soup. Okay, independence upon all those different qualities, we say soup. So because there's all those different attributes, we say there's soup there. Is the soup those attributes? No. Okay. So what exactly are you eating? Are you eating taste? Are you eating yellow? Are you eating heavy and hot? Are you eating, you know, smells like sweet peas? You know, what are you eating? I'm eating soup. But what's the soup that I'm eating? Can you find the soup without any of the attributes of the soup? How do I know I'm eating soup? Because of the attributes. Are the attributes the soup? No. But we say I'm eating soup, and that's the correct statement. Okay. But how we conceive of the soup existing is not how the soup exists, because we're having the appearance of a soup that has its own essence, and we're grasping that appearance as true. There's a real soup there with its own essence, and I want it, okay, before anybody else gets it. Yeah. But when we, so, you know, when we're not analyzing, there's the appearance of soup, and we talk about soup, and we cook soup, and we eat soup, and we do all sorts of things with soup. But when we analyze and try and find the soup, we can't find something separate that we can draw a line around that's the soup, that's independent of everything else. Okay? Similar, we say, I'm eating the soup. Who's eating the soup? I'm eating the soup. Who? My body or my mind? Can my mind eat soup? Pretty difficult for my mind to hold a spoon. Because my mind doesn't have form. So it must be my body that's eating the soup. Is it my fingers eating the soup? Is it my thigh bone eating the soup? Is it my teeth eating the soup? Who exactly is doing the eating around here? And what in the world does it mean to eat anything? You know, does eating mean you put it in the mouth? Does eating mean you chew it? Does eating mean you swallow it? What exactly is this action of eating that I say I'm doing? So you say, I'm eating the soup, and conventionally it's perfectly fine to say that. But when we start to examine those three things, the agent, the I, the action, eating, and the object, the feeling, some big I that's now one with everything. You know, there's still the appearance of subject and object. There's no, if you get deep enough into your analysis, you know, and you find that there's nothing inherently there, that's why emptiness is like space. I say space like emptiness, because you analyze and there's nothing there. Yeah. Does that mean that nothing exists? No, things exist, because I'm eating soup and everybody agrees. And it's perfectly all right on a conventional level to say, I'm eating soup. Okay? Even though when you try and find the I, the eating, and the soup, you can't find any of it. When you subject it to ultimate analysis, it has no ultimate existence. Okay? When we don't analyze and we work just on the level of appearances, there's an I, there's an eating, and there's a soup. And there's no problem with that. Okay, so what we're getting at is things exist on the conventional level as appearances, but they don't exist on the ultimate level. You know, when you examine on the ultimate level, you can't find any of it. So in the Heart Sutra, you know, when you read the Heart Sutra, no form, no shape, no color, die. You know, that's not non-dual perception of emptiness. Okay. So when we really think about what does it mean to have non-dual perceptionally, it's saying when you look for them as ultimately existent objects, there's none of them. And when you're in the state of meditative equipoise, on emptiness, you can't, none of those things appear. Yeah, only emptiness appears. And there's no I that's perceiving the emptiness. So when you're meditating on emptiness non-dually, it's not like there's an I hanging out here somewhere in the body and mind and an emptiness hanging out there that we're perceiving. You know, when they talk about non-duality of subject and object, it really means that. It means that that there's nobody sitting there saying, I'm realizing emptiness. In fact, you can't say I'm realizing emptiness until after you're out of the meditative equipoise, because the conventional labels and terms only apply when you're working in the conventional world, when you're not in meditative equipoise. But when you're in meditative equipoise, you know, the subject and object, they say it's like they're fused, like, you know, water poured in water. You can't differentiate them. And that sounds great on the level of words, but try and get a feeling. What does it mean that there's no subject and no object? Do we have any idea what that would feel like? You know, we can say all sorts of words, but what in the world does that mean? You know, and people who say, I became one with everything. What in the world does that mean? As long as you're feeling some big I that's now one with everything. You know, there's still the appearance of subject and object. There's no realization of emptiness there. Because there's still a big I, except instead of the I being the body and mind, I am now everything. So you just change your image, you change your mental image. Instead of me being this little picky person here, all of a sudden I become the whole universe, but there's still this big I. You know, that's not non-dual perception of emptiness. Okay? So when we really think about what does it mean to have non-dual perception, you know, who in the world knows? I have no idea what that's like. You know, because our lives are so caught in there's always a subject perceiving an object. Perceived. So how do you establish a subject without it having an object? And how do you establish an object without it being perceived by a subject? For it, don't they? You know, first there's this subject existing all by itself. And there's this object existing all by itself, and they just happen to meet. That's our how we understand perception. But what's the definition of subject? Something that perceives an object. What's the definition of object? Something that is perceived. So how do you establish a subject without it having an object? And how do you establish an object without it being perceived by a subject? You know, so this notion we have of this little independent subject happily going along and this little independent object going along and them just happening to meet, that's total hallucination, isn't it? That's not the way things exist. They can't exist that way. Because you only know an object if there's a subject perceiving it. You only know there's a subject if there's an object being perceived. They are defined in relationship to each other. So our mental image of them being totally separate, you know. So our Lama Yeshe used to tell us, you're hallucinating all the time, dear. You know, because we are. You know, what we perceive is total hallucination. So let's go eat some soup. Okay. And you see, on a convention, a real me, and there's a real soup, and a real act of eating, and there's a real I that's perceiving a real soup, and they both happen to be existing separate from each other right now, and we're going to go in the dining room, and they're going to... Things exist. We're going to go eat soup. If we think that there's a real me, and there's a real soup, and a real act of eating, and there's a real I that's perceiving a real soup, and they both happen to be existing separate from each other right now, and we're going to go in the dining room, and they're going to come together like that, that's our hallucination. Okay, that's not how things exist.